Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We're pleased to see that Jim's a cold medicine and Guinness combination served him well over the weekend. He's here and feeling better than ever. Good, bad, crazy martinis as always. And let's start with the good. Next week, we note the Supreme Court will be holding extremely long hearings by its standards over various aspects of the president's health care laws, one of which will be, of course, about the constitutionality of the individual mandate. Not that justices should necessarily follow the polls, but there's some pretty good ones out right now. This one from ABC News, Washington Post. 67% of Americans either want to get rid of the entire health care law or at least the individual mandate. There's other negative thoughts about that, too. Still, a majority of people either want to see it repealed or even think it's going to be repealed. So this is a good trend, even if the justices don't exactly do what we hope they do here. It's looking good, given the makeup of the court, but the momentum certainly seems to be on the right side here.
It is, Greg. This is not exactly a surprising poll result, but it is something of a reassuring one. You'll recall then-Speaker Pelosi saying, "We have to pass the bill in order to see what's in it." Well, we passed it, and Americans did not like it. And now you see, you know, week after week, month after month, year after year, the Democrats have convinced themselves that, oh, no, no, people will get used to it. They will come. You'll learn to love Obamacare, America. You'll learn to love it, kind of like an arranged marriage. And lo and behold, no, they have not. Public opinion polls may not necessarily have enormous sway with the justices. Obviously, the whole point of the Supreme Court is not necessarily to represent what the public wants, but to determine in the eyes of the law, is a particular law violating the Constitution or not. Having said that, the fact that so many Americans perceive this to be alien and unprecedented and unusual and draconian, if Congress has the authority to regulate inactivity, i.e. not buying health insurance, what doesn't Congress have the authority to regulate or to legislate or to make laws about? You will see very few Democrats running on Obamacare in 2012. There are a lot fewer of them around, obviously, because of the 2010 midterms, when some of them did try to run on Obamacare and they realized that their constituents didn't like it. I think you will see Republicans beating the drum on this early and often, and I think that this is a potential political loser. The one silver lining I would note that if the Supreme Court justices do decide that the individual mandate is constitutional, in a way for the right, this could be a win-win, because basically, as much as many of us will be banging our head against our desks and be frustrated and angry, I can't think of anything more, a greater motivator for conservative voters in 2012 than realizing that this presidential election is the only chance to stop Obamacare. If Obamacare is repealed or suspended by the Supreme Court because the individual mandate is deemed unconstitutional, that may, you know, take steam out of the momentum of Republicans because, well, okay, Obamacare has been stopped. We still have to get rid of this president, but there'll be that factor. So it's a kind of sort of a win-win, but it's nice to know that the public disdains Obamacare as much as it ever did.
Yeah, absolutely right. The public's got this right, even though Obama tried to initiate the goodies right away about pre-existing conditions, kids staying on their parents' health care and all this stuff. So very interesting campaign on this issue, whether it can get enough oxygen in addition to all the economic woes. But you're right. Either way, it's going to be good for the Republicans. It's either the last line of defense, as you mentioned, or even if the Supreme Court strikes it down, it's still got to be cleaned up because they may not strike down the entire thing. If they just strike down the mandate, that'll be up to Republicans to get rid of that too. So there's still an argument to be made even if the Supreme Court does much of the work that we hope it does. But there's also horrific work to be done at the end of the year. So we shift on to martini number two now. And you know, Jim, we always groan about the super committee or the Uber committee, as you like to call it. And you also have things that the Congress keeps kicking down the road, like the Bush tax cuts. What are we going to do about that at the end of this year? Of course, we just had the extension of the payroll tax cuts and the unemployment benefit extension. Well, a new column in the Wall Street Journal says all of this is coming to a head at the end of this year. And come January 1st, 2013, if nothing substantial is done about this, there's going to be a huge fiscal calamity here. And he says, given the fact that it's a campaign season, none of this is likely to get done before the election, which then leaves an awkward lame duck session, in which case you may have a president who's on his way out, a Senate, hopefully, which is about to change hands, which leaves very awkward negotiating time for a lot of this important stuff to get done, which means that probably a lot of it won't get done.
One of the things that makes this a particularly bad martini is the recognition that all of the Chinese puzzle you have kind of laid out here Not just one, but several of these issues on taxation, on spending, on the debt ceiling. Any time in the last couple of years that the President Obama and leaders in Congress have had an opportunity to kick the can down the road, they have done so. And everything is due at the same time in January 2013. So one of two things will happen. Either Obama will be reelected. Chances are we'll still have a Republican House and we'll have to have a marathon session of resolving all these things in the lame duck session. And if you think Obama is difficult now, imagine how he is when he's got a second term. Now, or the flip side, imagine that he loses. Just how eager do you think he is going to be to solve all of these problems for President Romney or President Santorum or President whoever who's about to take the oath of office? Call me crazy. I don't see Obama taking the high road and really doing his very best to work out the best possible solution to all of these issues. We all remember the story of the Clinton White House taking all the W's off the keyboard of the White House and kind of leaving it as a prank for their successors. I just have this terrible feeling. The Obama White House will not be eager to leave everything in terms of governance in the very smoothest, best organized way possible. So, yes, the clock is ticking. January 2013 could be an absolute mess. The one scenario might be that maybe if the Republican president wins a sufficient mandate, then they keep the mischief to a minimum and that he can sweep into office and, you know, deal with taxes, deal with spending, deal with the debt limit, deal with all these types of issues in as complete a way as possible. But that's a naive, optimistic take on what is a very bad martini.
Yeah.
Maybe the Mayans were right in a very different way.
Yes, December 21st, right?
The Mayans foresaw the debt negotiations between House Republicans and President Obama.
Well, we'll just assume that'll happen and then have nothing to worry about. On to martini number three now, Jim. And politicians love parades. We've always known that. And Vice President Joe Biden is no different. This past weekend, he was in Pittsburgh for the St. Patrick's Day parade. They handed out green and white signs saying Obama, and there was an apostrophe after the O. The vice president got very different reactions depending on which part of the parade route he was on. The first part seemed to be very favorable. And then as the NBC affiliate in Pittsburgh reports, things turned a little more negative. We'll bring you that audio now, as well as the defense of Joe Biden from a typical Obama-Biden supporter.
But as we followed him on to Stanwyck Street, that warm welcome turned cold. A chorus of boos rained down on Biden and his supporters on the last stretch. Still, Biden kept smiling. His supporters did too.
Oh, greatest day ever to have Biden here, man. That was the best experience ever in my life.
Wow. The tale of two streets there for Joe Biden. And let me tell you something. If meeting and seeing Joe Biden is the greatest event of your life, Jim, you got to get out a little bit more.
Exactly. I just hope your life has better moments than meeting Joe Biden. maybe in his mind, you know, I have a hard time believing, you know, Joe Biden could ever be chastened by any welcome. So I just figure in his mind, he probably heard them chanting, you, instead of boo. They're just so happy to see you. Perhaps the bit of the irony here is, why did they send him to Pittsburgh? Well, Joe Biden from Scranton, Pennsylvania, as he keeps reminding us, even though he was born there and spent most of his life in Delaware. Biden is the unofficial Rust Belt ambassador for this administration. I joke that when Obama took office, he'd be the first U.S. president who would need an ambassador to places like West Virginia. Biden is supposed to be the guy who's supposed to deliver the Rust Belt and work in these places like Ohio and Pennsylvania, where Obama had assessed that they are bitter clingers, clinging to their guns and religion, etc. And, you know, perhaps that after a couple of years, Joe Biden is not quite as effective as Obama thought, as somebody who could take the Obama message into these white working class communities. It was these are traditionally, you know, fairly Democratic, at least you go back to 50 years. That bond has been broken, and I think, you know, there are probably lots of folks in Pittsburgh, and let's face it, traditionally a Democratic town, who are no longer quite so enamored of this administration. You can't help but wonder if certain regulations on coal power, et cetera, might not be playing well in that area. So tough luck for Joe Biden, but hey, you know, pour some more beers on St. Patrick's Day and people's spirits will brighten a little bit.
So. Yeah, if the folks in Western Pennsylvania are disillusioned with this administration, they've got a lot of company.
49 to 56 other states, you could say.
That's exactly right. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.